Welcome to the Agency Profit Podcast, a show dedicated to going deep space on agency operations, which is just as nerdy as it sounds. I'm your host, Marcel Petipoff. I'm the CEO of Parakeeto, a firm that helps digital and creative agencies measure and improve their profitability. Join me as I interview some of the smartest thought leaders and agency owners in our space and go deep into operations, metrics, and all the other things you need to get right so you can spend less time worrying about operations and more time executing on your vision. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Agency Profit Podcast. I'm super excited to introduce you guys to a friend of mine who, funny enough, was one of the first people that ever responded to one of my emails back when Parakeeto was just an idea and I was just a kid with a laptop sending out a bunch of emails. And then full circle, about a year and a half later, we get to share a stage together in Austin, Texas and reconnect where our guest shared some really powerful stuff on stage, things that a lot of people are not talking about, but I think is super important. And I'm excited for him to share it with you today. He runs an agency called Impact. They were founded in 2009. They are up to 70, 80 people today, have been the HubSpot Partner of the Year, the Digital Marketer Agency of the Year, Diamond HubSpot Partners. They won Best Culture. They won Best Place to Work, Best Place to Work for Women. Truly an amazing organization. And Bob, truly an amazing guy. So Bob, super excited to have you on the show. Welcome.
Marcel, you did your research, man. Appreciate that. And thank you for such a great intro. And I'm honored to be on your show today.
Awesome. Well, listen, I'm honored to have you here as well. And I'm excited to get into a little bit of what you talked about, because I think it's going to be so valuable for everyone that's listening at home. But before we get into that, you know, I've given everybody a little bit of the accolades, but why don't you share a little bit more about, you know, who you are, what you do, so people can get a little more familiar.
Yeah, so we're Impact. We're a digital sales and marketing organization. You mentioned HubSpot. You know, that's obviously a big part of our growth is through the HubSpot partner community. You know, our real big thing is that, you know, we work with Marcus Sheridan. He's actually a partner of ours now. So really adopting what his philosophy is of digital sales and marketing. They Ask, You Answer is the book. And so we're very much in the education and training business. I haven't always been in the education consulting training business, but much more now, teaching people how to do content marketing the right way that really drives revenue. And we've been able to use the philosophies of They Ask, You Answer, and it's proven time and time again to work, getting people up and going with their HubSpot portals. And then really it's now also starting to do way more with video and helping people build cultures of video for sales and marketing inside the organization. So that's really where we're specializing.
Awesome. Very cool. And you know, one of the things that I always say about you guys, and when I met your team, I said this to them in Austin, I said, I love how you guys really walk the walk. So anybody that's listening, go over to Impact's website. I'll have it in the show notes. Like, their website is a blog. You guys are like amazing at creating content. I know you told me that everybody at Impact has to write content. It's part of the job, no matter what their role is. And I think it's so cool that you've built that culture, and it just permeates at Impact. And so naturally, you know, you help your clients kind of build hopefully the same kind of engine for content. But what you guys have done is really incredible. You've got some incredible content on the website. So thanks for walking the walk.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, content's been a huge part of our growth. When we were very small, 7 people, and we started really drinking the Kool-Aid of Inbound and HubSpot and other companies that influenced us, and we saw they were all just cranking out content. So I think we kind of, more blind faith than anything, just went all in. And we said, okay, well, we you know, HubSpot's putting out 3 or 4 articles a day. Maybe we should do the same thing. And we really just try to mimic other brands like that, put a full-time person on there, said, okay, can you, you know, at least crank out 5 to 10 articles per week? Absolutely, very early on, made it a mandate. If you're going to work for this company, you have to be part of our content creation efforts. And, you know, we started that in probably 2010, 2011. So here we are, you know, 9 years later. And, you know, we have a website that generates 250,000 visitors per month. We haven't always been the best agency. I would be the first to admit that. We're a lot better now than we were maybe even 3 years ago. But having that powerful content engine has really helped us, it's given us the authority when we probably didn't deserve the authority. It gave us leads and business opportunities when we were probably losing business on the other end. And really, it was one of the most important things we've done to make sure the company was stable and got us through some tough periods when we had to figure some other things out. Luckily, we did.
Awesome, man. I mean, yeah, you guys have really done a tremendous job. So again, if you haven't seen Impact's website, go see it. It's different than every other agency website I've seen. So it's worth a look. Get some inspiration there. So you talked a little bit about starting the business. And, you know, I read, you've got a great story on your LinkedIn profile where you talk about graduating from university, not getting any job offers, so saying, screw it, I'm going to start my own agency. How did Impact come to be?
Probably like most agencies start. I mean, I was working for a local manufacturing company in my hometown, doing marketing for them. It was my first job at school. Because of the guy who hired me was my parents' neighbor, lives across the street from them. And of course, this is, you know, 2007, 2008. It wasn't the best time in the economy. So really was hard going finding a job back then for everybody. And so I struggled finding a job. I did that for a few years, learned a lot at that organization, you know, took their website, got a bunch of visitors for them, got a bunch of leads for them. Just again, reading whatever I can, trying. It was my little project of, can I help build this organization's brand and start really driving traffic leads? Once I started having some success there, my boss at the time started saying, hey, can you do this for some of my friends that have companies? So I was able to do some like freelance work on the side. I had about four or five really good freelance clients. Got really passionate about it and said, you know, maybe I'll take this full time. So I just basically quit my job in 2009 and became a freelancer. Always thought I wanted to have employees. There was a company that was in my hometown. And every town has like four or five agencies, all different sizes, different specialties. But there was this like three or four person company in my town. I was like, you know what? That's my next milestone. That's where I want to be. They got an office. They've got three or four employees, and they capitalized the market of small businesses in Wallingford, Connecticut. And I was like, you know, I want to just be in that field. So that was like the next benchmark for me. So I was just working out of my office. You know, I started hiring some people at very low salaries and interns. Again, this is back in 2009, 2010, when no one can get a job. So there was a lot of people were taking free internships, just trying to get their foot in the door somewhere. And, you know, things are different now, but that was how we really got our start, was getting some freelancer or again, some interns. And, you know, going to 2011, we feel like we actually hit that milestone of, okay, that was the vision of like, can we be in this category like this other company was? I think our growth has always been looking at what's out there, these competitors, these brands, saying, if they're doing it, why can't we? And we usually set these like benchmarks for ourselves. And that was the next benchmark. So I would say probably about 2011, we probably had five or six or seven employees. We had an office and we started getting some pretty decent local clients, small to mid-sized business clients. But we built up a pretty stable business, and that was like the first marker for us.
So then after that happens, I heard a story about a lucky break. Well, I don't want to call it a lucky break. You earned it, of course.
Oh, we've had so many lucky breaks.
It was the infographic that you guys did with HubSpot that really blew up. This was when Pinterest was really coming of age and started driving a ton of traffic to your website. And it was a bit of a quick spike after that in growth. Talk a little bit more about how that happened.
Yeah, so in late 2011, this is like the next big thing for us. We started doing a lot of research. We were doing these websites and light marketing projects, and clients were coming back to saying, hey, listen, we love our new website. It's beautiful. It's exactly what we wanted. But we thought we would get more traffic or leads from it. Like, we're not really seeing the increase there. Is our website broken? So we had to get better at that, because that's what the market was telling us. That's where our clients wanted. So I did a bunch of research online, you know, how to get more leads, social media, email marketing, you know, how does this integrate into sales? And time again, I landed on HubSpot's website. And to most people on this, listen to the show, would know that if you've engaged with anything with HubSpot and their website, you filled out any forms, you're going to get a call from them. And they're going to try to, if you're an agency, they're going to try to get you into their partner program. So this guy, Kevin Lenihan, calls me up and, you know, he's like, listen, we know how to take companies like you and turn them into $1 million, multi-million-dollar businesses. So that's all I needed to know, because we were about doing $300,000 a year at the time. So that was kind of our next thing, is like, how do we make $1 million business? Wouldn't it be cool if we had $1 million business? And I believed him. And I was like a one call close, signed up for the partner program. And it was like, all right, cool. Now we're a inbound marketing agency. We're a HubSpot partner. And oh crap, what does any of that mean? So we had to start doing some research. We had to really start teaching ourselves, okay, what is inbound marketing and how do you use it and how do you sell it for clients and how do you use HubSpot? And we basically, being visual people, we just created like this flow chart of like the inbound marketing process from start to finish. So we showed it to our contacts at HubSpot, and they said, you know, this is great. And if you make it more like an infographic, we'll put it on our blog for you. And like you mentioned, you know, it was like this perfect storm of infographics being hot, HubSpot being hot, inbound marketing as a term being really hot, and Pinterest. And that thing, like you, again, it's a huge lucky break. I mean, that thing took off. We got our first 5 like big retainer clients. We became $1 million business like almost overnight. It happened that fast. Now, could we service all that? Well, you know, we figured it out for a few of the accounts. We actually still have a few of those early clients are still with us. Some of them aren't because we screwed it up. Like we do a lot. But you know, we just figured out, and all of a sudden now we're a top tier HubSpot partner because we sold some deals really fast, able to ride that wave all the way to still till today. And it's been, you know, again, a lucky break, but it was one of the most important things through our career. And I think there's still lessons to be learned from that. I mean, besides just being lucky, it's finding those opportunities. Because HubSpot was the hot thing back then. There's still an opportunity to come to the HubSpot market and do something different and capitalize on that market. It's not completely monopolized or dried up yet, but you can find other communities. Like Digital Marketers Partner Program is just really getting off the ground. There's a huge opportunity to get into that. There's other software. There's Drift that's building a partner network. So I think there's still lessons there. And then is there some way that you can use content and today use video and interactive components of your website to really put yourself, thrust yourself as we are the leaders in this space. You know, certainly I felt like a pretender very early on. Most certainly we were, but that got us to where we are today. So I guess anyone that's listening to this, like, don't be afraid of being a pretender. We all are. We're all learning things together, and no one's got conversational marketing figured out. No one's got account-based marketing fully figured out. Some people will say they do, and some people are really good at it, but there's still room for someone to come in and be the new leader, because these things are changing every single day. So I think that would be my advice is, from that lesson, is just go for it and don't hold yourself back because you don't think you're ready for it. That's, you know, if we held ourselves back because we didn't think we were ready for it, we would still be a 5-person company.
Yeah. And I mean, I would have none of Parakeeto would exist. I wouldn't have been on that stage in Austin. I think we all doubt ourselves for sure. That's a great insight. So
on top of that, just to add one other thing, like you're going to stumble, you're going to fail, you're going to get in front of an audience, you're going to sound like an idiot, and that's going to happen. That's okay too, because you need reps. That's the biggest thing. Is anything that you do, you got to throw yourself out there, put the pressure on yourself and overcome that. And then the next time, don't make the same mistakes and learn from it. There's so many stories of like people that, you know, some people will just like let their company go out of business, or they won't grow, and they'll have a million reasons why it never happened for them. And then there are just other people who are like, listen, I'm not going to let this business go out of business. I'm going to go to the bank and go get a loan. And I'm going to look like an idiot the first time I go get a loan. They're going to say no. The second time I go, I'm going to be a little bit better, but they're still going to say no. And it might not be until try 55 that someone says yes. But along the way, every meeting that you had, you learned and you got better and you got better and you got better. You need those reps, and just being aggressive and getting those reps as fast as you can is the best way to grow.
Definitely. 100%, man. So for everyone that's listening at home that has that thing, everybody has that thing at all times. I've got that thing right now that you're like, I should wait till I'm more ready. But like the truth is, it's probably time to do it right now and just light the fire under yourself and rise to the occasion.
And, you know, taking that principle too, like even when we do things on our website or even stuff for clients' websites, I'd rather ship it, you know, broken than wait for it to be perfect until we launch it. Because what happens, what I've learned, and this is a principle I always follow and try to convince our clients this, they don't always like it, but it's the truth. If we wait for it to be perfect, it may never launch. It could be 3 months later before it launches. And we've so much missed opportunity. When you launch something that's broken, all of a sudden there's a little bit of urgency to get it fixed. Now you get it launched sooner, but then you get fixed faster and you're a lot better for it. So whenever we launch things on Impact's website, chances are the day we launch it, you're going to be able to find a ton of bugs. But now we're scrambling to make sure we get all those fixed and we learn from it and we get more feedback from our audience. And things just happen a lot faster for us because we do that. So again, I'm not sure if that's a lesson that could be valuable to anybody, but that's just the way we operate here.
Well, I mean, that's certainly a principle too, that I think, you know, in the software world, we're super familiar with that. That's the whole concept of being lean and shipping stuff before it's ready and getting feedback. And it really, to your point, it forces essentialism in the way that we prioritize things. Like there is no more prioritizing things that are not actually important because now there's stakeholders involved. So definitely can have a big impact and make people move faster. So I want to dig a little bit more into the story and lead into a little bit more of what kind of you talked about in Austin. So you guys started growing pretty fast, but then eventually growth kind of slowed down and you were in the 20 something employees range. And this is interesting to me because over the year and a half that I've been doing this, speaking to a lot of agencies, there are very distinct, it seems like, stages of growth. And, you know, they're marked by specific challenges that a lot of agencies share. And so for you guys, one of those stages was kind of that mid-20s stage. And I remember in Austin, you shared kind of looking back, what you realized was holding you back from growing at that time. And it was something that nobody really expected to hear. So what was the moment when you kind of realized this is what's going on here? This is why we're stuck.
Do you want some free resources to help you measure and improve your profitability? If you do, then I want to tell you about our agency profitability toolkit, which you can grab absolutely free in the show notes or by heading to parakeeto.com/toolkit. It's packed with training videos, cheat sheets, templates, and all kinds of other great resources to help you start measuring and improving the essential metrics that are going to drive better profitability in your business. And it's helped thousands of other agencies around the world do the same. So I want to encourage you to go and grab a copy of that. And if you'd rather get in the fast lane and just have our team of experts guide you through the process of measuring and improving your profitability, then I want to encourage you to apply for a consultation at parakeeto.com. And with that, I want to thank you again for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the episode and I'll let you get back to it.
What was the moment when you kind of realized this is what's going on here? This is why we're stuck.
Yeah. And there's so many things. I mean, at that stage of 25 people, there's so many things that can go wrong. There's so many reasons why we didn't grow. Do we always have the right people? Probably not. And that was something that we continuously had to work on, getting the right people in the right seats, the wrong people off the bus, all that Jim Collins stuff. And most of the things that a lot of my principles come from Jim Collins, huge fan of his. And there were things about culture and values. There's things about having the right visions. We're all going the right direction. There's things about not being afraid to fire people. That was a lot of like the challenge we had from 2013 to probably 2017, 2018. And then that was like really maybe the challenges between 18 to 30 people were those types of things. And I've got a bunch of talks and a bunch of material on what got us through that part. But then we got out of that. We were at 30. We finally cracked that 3 million number that we were really trying to crack through. Our breakthrough. And it's like, all right, how do we go from like 30 to 60, 70, 80, 90? Now I want to just put a little caveat here. We're not growing just for growth's sake. Like I don't want to, it's to me, winning is not having the biggest agency, the most money, the most people. And that's not what motivates me. It's not why I do it. I'm not trying to tout that we are the best agency in the space. I honestly do it so my people that have been with me for so long can grow in their careers and they don't feel like they have to leave the company to grow. So that means I have individual contributors that want to become managers. I have managers that want to become directors. I have directors that want to become VPs and VPs that want to become C-levels. And I've got people that were so good, been with me so long that need to have equity and ownership at some level. So we grow for them. You know, I've got people that start as unpaid interns that make six figures. The only way we're going to be able to create those opportunities and those lives for our people is if the company grows. We have to grow because of that. And everyone in the company, I think, understands that and they get that. And I think they know that our growth and why we're pushing for growth comes from that. That's my biggest motivator. So now how are we going to get from that 30 to 60? Because again, we're losing some good people because there's not places for them to go. And we've got to figure this out. And I think it really hit me. There's a Jim Collins quote. I knew it for years, but it's like, do I want to be the genius with 1,000 helpers? Is it the Bob Ruffalo show, or is it an organization that could thrive even without me? And we had some scary talks in like 2016, 2017. Like, what happened if I got hit by a bus? Would this company survive? Or would everyone have to go find other jobs, or our clients would go have to find other service providers and consultants? And it's like, that's not good. That's not the company that I want to build. That's not where I want to be. So for me, it was like, I've got to build an organization. I've got to build a franchise. That's my biggest job, is to build a company that will thrive for many, many years with or without me. And that was a big shift for me. And then when I looked at a lot of my peers, and I looked at a lot of other agencies, I was like, you know what? There's a lot of, in this space, at companies of that size, agencies of that size, there's a lot that are a genius with 1,000 helpers. And they are the lead salesperson. They are the best marketer. They go to these events, and all they care about is like learning new marketing tactics. They can go back and impress their employees about how much they know, impress their clients about how much they know, get on podcasts to show how much they know, create content, whatever they have to do so they can build their personal brands. And then have this agency that like all supports their personal brand. And that I think is disastrous for a company that actually wants to grow and do what we're trying to do, create careers and create a company that's going to be around for a long time. So in Austin, I showed the analogy. It's like, do you want to be the superstar on the team, or do you want to be the owner of the team and the franchise builder of the team? And I showed this crazy graphic of Jerry Jones playing quarterback, and we think about that. It's like, why would Jerry Jones ever be in the field? That's ridiculous. His job is not to be the best football player. His job is to put the best field on the team and make sure that that team is successful. And when we make that shift, that I no longer need to be the best marketing company, I no longer need to be the smartest one in the room. My job is to build the best company. And all my learning, all my development, all my focus has to be on leadership and management and building great organizations. And once I made that shift, it's like, now I'm building leaders that can run departments. You know, my thing is like the what and the why. We need to do this because of this. Your job is to figure it out. And oh my God, when people feel they're so much more empowered in their roles and they have the autonomy and they start to thrive because like, wait, I make these decisions? I you're not telling me what to do? Like, no, you're smart. I need you to figure it out. Do they stumble? Of course they do. I stumbled when I was in that role, and that's okay. But if they don't stumble now, they're never going to be able to take over the organization later. So the amount of individual growth we've had because we've done this, and then the company growth. Now, you know, I think you were a little you made it sound a little bit better in the beginning. You said 70, 80. We're actually 65 right now. We do have plans to add more people. We do need to bring some more people on. But, you know, I'm not selling. I'm not working with clients. I'm not strategizing for them. And quite frankly, my team would tell me, Bob, please don't. You'll just screw things up. And they're absolutely right. You know, I don't know all the latest marketing tactics. Obviously, I'm involved in our own marketing, our own brand. That's important to me. But these guys need to be much better at that than I do. I need to know where the world's going. Obviously, I got to direct the organization. But at a super tactical level, I shouldn't be the one that knows how to fly around HubSpot or these tools the best. they do. I just need to know this is what we should and could be doing. Other companies are doing it. Why aren't we? And if you can't do it, I'll get somebody else that can do it. I know that sounds harsh, but it's true. But at the same token, it's like, I hope you're motivated by that. This is all on you. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You need to own this and you need to deliver on it. So that's become our new philosophy. And I guess not really a new philosophy. It's just we're doing it a lot better than we did before. And we're not perfect at it. No, and that's the other thing. Like, no business is perfect. No agency is perfect. You think, you know, our brand is pretty strong, I think, in this space, but we've got a lot of issues, just like any company. And I think we're just very vocal and transparent about them, but we're growing. And we went from 30 to 60 people in 18 months. So, you know, it's embracing the messy and just doing your best. That's all I think our employees and our clients and everyone asks for. That was a long rant. Hopefully that was valuable. So hopefully there's something in there that people could take away.
Yeah, so absolutely. And if you're listening to this, wherever it is, you know, leave a comment of what you got from this, if that resonated with you, whether you know other people that are in that predicament, or if you yourself feel like you're kind of in that predicament where you're the linchpin in the organization. I can tell you from experience, Bob, that when you said that on stage, I immediately thought of like a dozen people that I knew that were in that situation. One of which is, you know, a really close friend of mine. And it's like, it's so frustrating when you can't really say this to them, but they, you know, and I think, and this is an interesting question that I have for you, but it, which is really around what the most challenging part of that transition was. But I know for some people, and even myself in the past and other things that I've done, for them, sometimes it's like too much of their identity is tied up with being important at work. And, you know, they don't have another outlet for that. And so, you know, they have to be needed, otherwise they don't feel valued. And you know, it's hard to watch somebody continuously sabotage their growth because they just need to feel important at work. When the reality is they could grow so much faster if they just let other people be important and swallow their pride. But, you know, that's kind of my take on what I've seen and what I've experienced. But I'd be curious to know, as you came to that realization and said, this is what I'm going to do, what was the most challenging part about that?
There were a lot of challenging parts. I think hiring is always tough. You know, we've had people we were really excited about that didn't play out. That's really tough when, you know, letting people go is always tough. You know, that, you know, you get better at, but it's never easy. It's never easy. That hurts. But I think the most challenging thing is those moments where you do question yourself and you say, am I good enough? And I've had over the last few years a lot of those moments. You know, can I actually do this? Am I actually that? You know, do I have the abilities to bring this to fruition? You know, we've had leadership team meetings where, and we always score at the end of the leadership team meetings, like, you know, and we might be having a lot of challenges and we're trying to figure out some big things. My team will give a score like, yeah, I feel like we really moved the needle today. And so we get eights and nines and tens. And I, guys, you know, for you guys, I'll give you a 10. For me, I give myself a 2. And I'm like, I don't feel like I'm doing a good job right now. And I need to get better. If we're really going to be where we need to be, I need to be a much better leader because I am letting people down left and right now. And I think that was probably the most challenging part, is just like, really, can I do this? And I'm sure everyone goes through that, whether they want to admit it or not. But that's always been like a challenge. And no, I think right now we're feeling pretty good. We're really riding a good wave right now, but there's going to be another ceiling. And then, you know, again, it's going to be like, whatever that ceiling is, I don't know where it's going to be. Maybe it's 10 million. I don't know. But like, are we going to be able to break through that? And that, and we're accomplishing things that few people want to have the opportunity to do. You know, we're very lucky that we even have the opportunity to do it. But, you know, it's going to be a different world for us when we get there. So I think that just the personal things are probably the most challenging.
I can totally resonate with what you're saying. I think it comes back kind of to what we talked about earlier, right? And it's like you're letting go of the things that you've been revered for in the past, you've had confidence in, and you've always been the guy for, and you're stepping into something that you need more reps at, and you know you're going to make mistakes at. And you've got to embrace that and do it in front of your whole team. That's got to be a challenge to get up every day and put yourself in a situation where you're like, man, I might screw this up. My whole team might see it, but it's what you got to do.
Yeah. And luckily, I just have the absolute best team. I'm so lucky. I have people that have been with me for 7, 8 years, and I wasn't always a good boss or a good leader. In fact, I was a really, really bad boss, really bad leader for the first 5 years, probably more. I've had to really work on myself, but they grinded it out with me, and they showed up every day and brought their best every day. And I often wonder, like, if I had to do this all over again, could I do it again? And then the first thing that always comes back to my head is, like, I don't know if I could ever do it again without my team. And I've got the best people. And so yeah, that's just throwing some more stuff in there.
So I'm sure a lot of people listening that are thinking, you know, maybe they feel like they're in that situation, or they see the writing on the wall, and maybe they're approaching a size where, you know, they're struggling with these things. What are, you know, some of the most important things that you think they could take away and work on to make sure that they can avoid some of the mistakes and pitfalls that maybe you've run into?
Yeah. I would say the most important thing, really, at any size, and you start this when it's just you, and you really go all in even more when you start getting 5, 6 people. I think that's the most important part, is really getting some of that foundational organizational type things going. So think like EOS or Rockefeller Habits, or you know, scaling up. And EOS was really important for us. And I would say all those basic things, like, what is the purpose of this organization, and knowing what that is, so everyone in the company can recite, like, this is why we exist. Having a vision, like, and I love 3-year visions. That's one of the most important things we've ever done. We've done a few 3-year visions now, and saying, okay, in 3 years, this is exactly what this organization looks like if everything went exactly the way we wanted it to go. Because then what you do is you give your entire team an end zone, and they all know, okay, this is what we're moving the ball towards. This is where we're trying to go. And every decision, every micro decision, everything could be based around ending up there. And once we put that vision in place, we make all of our decisions off of that. Like, should we acquire this company or not? Should we invest in this project or invest in this company or not? Should we adopt this tool or not? And we always use the vision. And the best way to create a vision, if you're a single person, you just do that one activity I said. What is this company going to look like at the end of 3 years? And write it all down. Once you start having employees, you get it out of your head, but you have a really, really open conversation to get them involved in that process. When you have a small team, it's even better, because they can start putting more things in there you weren't even thinking about. And once they have things in that vision, they own the vision. They're going to be as passionate seeing that through as you will be. Once you get to a bigger organization, you just got to do this in stages and really roll this out. So the whole company's got to feel like they have a say in it. But that's been one of the most important tools. Core values are extremely important once you get to a certain size. Again, I think that's core values are great to start rolling out. Once you've had some employees and you really say, okay, now we know the differences between a successful employee and a not successful employee in this environment. And then you build your core values around that. So you don't have to create those too early, but once you get to a certain size, that's important. And be willing to hire, promote, and fire off those core values. I would also say transparency is incredibly important. And I showed in Austin how we're extremely transparent with our decisions and our financials. And I'll give you a really interesting story. So we do what's called the great game of business. It's open book management. Some people think they do open book management because they show financial reports to their company, but that's open book reporting, not management. Management means that you can manage to it. You can actually do something with it and impact those numbers before it's too late. So every single week, we go through a combination of a scorecard and financial metrics of what we're doing for this current month. We do it early so we can change the numbers and do things to make the numbers go into the direction we want to go into. So we do this, and we were looking at our revenue numbers, and everyone kind of gave their forecast for what the different teams would be pulling in for revenue. and we were way off. Like, I'm talking like $100,000 on the month off plan, and it was scary. It was amazing watching how this organization, slightly driven by me, but definitely it was an organization coming together saying, we can't let the month end at this. It's going to impact what we're trying to do as a company, our growth. It's going to impact, you know, our bonus, which is a small portion of the decision. But they know, listen, we have a plan. We got a hit plan. What are we going to do about this? So just being that transparent and watching the company know that they come together, the next week, watching the gap they closed. And had we not been that transparent with everyone, they didn't understand why. They didn't see how it was actually impact the bottom line and know how that affects their growth and their careers. They would have been like, we don't get it. We don't know. All you care about is revenue. And at the end of the month, we would have had a really, really bad month. But now we're going to end up having a good month because the team rallied together. They got, they understood it. So I think once you start getting to a certain size, and I would say once you get to, I think early, I think at any size, you should make sure everyone's financially literate. You're as transparent as possible. You understand your decision-making as much as possible. But then start rolling out like the, something like the Great Game. And that was a game changer for us, an absolute game changer as well. At the last, because you asked for three, and I'll say the third thing I would add in is once you get to a certain size and you start doing things well, you're going to realize that we also do certain things not well, and then find creative ways to build your organization through mergers and acquisitions. And that was huge for us as well. So I told you we had really good brand, we had a good marketing, we had a good culture, we had great people. We didn't have a great product. We didn't have great playbooks. There's also services that we knew we needed to offer that we never offered before. And we also need just more talent to be able to do what we were doing. So knowing those things, we went out and strategically did for mergers and acquisitions. And we built up a whole paid channel because of that. We brought in some amazing talent, my head of marketing, my head of my web team, my design manager, and our top content strategists all came from one company. And the biggest one was when we merged with Marcus Sheridan's company, because he had such a superior product. He had the best case studies in this entire space. And I was so jealous of that. And I was like, you know what? We got so much good stuff going on. Like, we need to find a way to work together. And it worked out for Marcus because he got, you know, to do what he wanted to do with his career. So it was a great opportunity for him. We got all this playbooks. We got some of this great talent. And now we're rolling that out. What he was doing with a four-person company for a dozen clients, now we're doing at scale with 65 employees for hundreds of clients. And that it was that shift of the product to be much more consultative. And we have a much better product now than we had ever before. So I'm super, super excited about that. So that would be the third one. Once you get to a certain size, I would say once you're in your 20s, you know, no one, chances are if you grew an agency like I did, it's not like you have millions of dollars sitting in the bank to go acquire agencies. But I think there's a lot of creativity that goes into it. And you could really find some amazing opportunities if you could really get creative about it.
Awesome. So just to recap, you talked about a couple of things early on, making sure that you've got some systems in place around how you operate. So this is entrepreneurial operating system stuff. Look at the principles from Jim Collins. I'm going to leave some notes down below, by the way, guys, so you can find these resources. Making sure you got a vision mapped out fairly early on. And if you've got a team, making sure that they're engaged in that. I love the part about being open with the team. Great Game Business is obviously a great resource that'll also be down below. But I mean, this is something that we've started talking about a lot at Paracutos. How can, you know, we help enable those kinds of conversations in agencies? Because the people that do it, I've never seen teams so empowered when they can actually not only go and do their jobs with a lot of autonomy, but they actually have access to the information they need to have a feedback loop that doesn't depend on, you know, a cadence with a manager or something like that. So that's awesome. And then finally, looking at opportunities for mergers and acquisitions to take the business to the next level.
Yeah, I think those would be three good things.
So if you guys are listening and you want to check out some of the stuff that was mentioned, just head into the show notes and I'll have some links there for that. So last but not least, if you're listening and you want to connect with Bob, where should they go? What's the best place to reach you?
The best thing, I'll be honest, is our Facebook community, Impact Elite. So it's a Facebook group. Go ahead and take a look for it. I hang out in there a lot. We have our whole team is in there. So, and as transparent as I try to be in all these interviews or wherever on stage, my team is as transparent. If you want to call BS on anything I said today, go ahead and ask my team, you know, and they'll tell it real. So I think that's a great place for all agencies to hang out, for staff members to hang out, for, you know, cause my whole team's in there as well. Our clients are in there. It's just a great place to hang out, and feel free to ping me in there.
Awesome. So I'll leave a link to that Facebook group as well in the show notes. Make sure you check it out. And hopefully you'll be talking about your Impact Live events in there as well. For those of you that are listening that aren't aware, Impact hosts live events, and lots of agencies go to those. It's cool because, like, you're still competing with agencies, but you have a great attitude, I think, towards competition. You're really just trying to help everybody move more successful. So,
and you know what, we've always questioned that, like, should we allow agencies into Impact Elite? Should we allow them to come to Impact Live? And then going back to, like, that alignment of the organization, our purpose is to help people in the organization succeed. And nowhere does it say unless you're a competitor. You know, if I can help agencies grow, I'm going to do that. In fact, the lessons I've learned, we're going to do that. So be part of Impact Elite. Come to Impact Live. And, like, listen, if our clients are there and agencies are like, oh, I'm going to, like, use that as an opportunity to steal your clients, like, that just means I got to get better. Our company needs to be better if our clients are going to be that willing to just, like, leave like that. So we're, you know, we try to not, again, in the spirit of transparency and helpfulness, and we just put it all out there, and we're not worried about competitors. It's co-opetition.
So there you have it, guys. If you're listening, go to Impact Elite, and you can steal all of Impact's clients. So with that, I want to just kind of wrap things up and thank you again for coming on the show. It's always awesome to talk to you. Always so insightful.
My pleasure, bud.
Knowledge and experience, and it's just great to follow the journey. So those of you that are listening, make sure you leave a comment, send us a message, let us know what you got from this episode, and share it with somebody if you feel like there's something in here that they need to hear to bring their business to the next level. And thanks again for being here, Bob. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you've ever found yourself thinking, man, I get so much value from this podcast, I wish there was something I could do to return the favor. Well, today's your lucky day, because you can leave us a review wherever you're listening to this, and it is incredibly helpful. Of course, if you haven't grabbed a free copy of the Agency Profit Toolkit, go and get that. It's got tons of free resources to help you improve your profitability. If you're looking to get in the fast lane and get help from experts to improve your profitability and measure your most important metrics, then apply for a consultation at parakeeto.com. We'd love to chat with you and figure out how we can help. With all of that, thank you so much for being a listener, and we will see you on the next episode.